Today's show brought to you in part by our friends over at America's Best Racing. You can vote for the Fan Choice Awards now. Only a few days of voting left. Of course, we're very much encouraging you to vote for us as your favorite horse racing podcast. And we've made it easy for you in terms of the link to find inthemoneypodcast.com/vote. We'll bring you there. Lots of other great categories as well. You want to be sure to vote for JK as Best Analyst and a host of other things, including races of the year, jockeys, etc. Lots of good stuff on there. Please vote today. You can find the ABR awards if you go to inthemoneypodcast.com/vote. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Friday, November 27th. I sit here with a belly full of still digesting turkey, I think, at least from the leftover sandwich I made around midnight. Very happy to be with you ahead of an exciting weekend of racing. I am not in the Brooklyn bunker, as you can see. I'm actually in a location we've recorded from here a bunch of times, but I don't think we've ever done it with video. This is my father's old office on the North Shore of Long Island. And it's good to be here. I always enjoy broadcasting from this room. Three great guests to talk about racing with you. We're going to be covering Aqueduct. We're going to be covering Churchill Downs. And we're going to look out west to Del Mar. No Woodbine this week, despite the best efforts of our friends up north. To my mind, very illogically, the Ontario government has decided that Woodbine, while they're allowing training there, they're not allowing racing in the afternoon, despite the fact that they did such a good job all throughout the pandemic from when they resumed, for whatever reason, lost in the politics. Looks like we're not going to have Woodbine until April. Don't worry, though, you Drew Cotney fans, you're going to be getting him doing some work on Tampa and maybe some other tracks, too, throughout the course of the winter. You can look for that over at inthemoneypodcast.com. But let's kick things off with a returning guest of the show. Always enjoy bringing in from the StuCast, Alan Studer. Alan, I think you're going to appear in this photo in a second. There you are. How are you? How are things, man? What's been going on over at the StuCast?
Oh, we're busy, man. It's good to see you and talk with you. Just busy. College basketball season's here. We're in the middle of feast week. I put out a mega podcast this week. I'm just gambling. I got money going everywhere, basketball, football, badminton, highlight. It's nuts. So okay. It's a lot of fun.
After our own heart. Now, if you're calling it a megapod, I hope you're paying royalties to my friend Gil Alexander.
So we just did a name change. It's not the megapod anymore. It's a superpod. So okay,
there you go.
How's the newspaper business going, by the way, PTF? I like that. You selling? Like you're fresh out of Newsies.
A reference to the punter's cap. This is a good one. I enjoy this hat. This is a good. It's good seasonal. They're a little more practical than the fedoras when the weather gets cold. And then you also noted my Mr. Rogers sweater, which is one of my.
I'm just waiting for the door to knock and the mailman to show up like that.
Oh, we'll go out back and play with the train and all that good stuff. All right, we have only about 10 minutes to go over this pick five. So as much as I would enjoy talking nonsense with you nearly endlessly, I think we should dive into this.
Let's get after it.
I've been super pleased with this racing we've seen at Aqueduct in the month of November. It's been great with the mild weather. The turf racing continues. We kick things off with race number six. It's a two-year-old maiden going six furlongs on the dirt for colts. I will let you kick this one off as the guest. Where did you end up in here? How do you want to kick off this pick five?
Well, thank you, sir. A lot of logicals here. Jonathan Thomas, Chad Pletcher. I looked at Ragged Union. I think that's the most likely winner. You look at a 10-flat breeze at the works. Three really nice spaced works back-to-back-to-back here. If I'm going to throw in a price, I like the 9, Nerves of Steel. I think this one has a huge excuse. Muddy, wide. I mean, it might as well have been racing on the apron. This one is precocious. I think it could be on the bit up front, and I like speed. and having one in there. And plus those last three works, they show me this one's coming into it ready to go. So those are my two plays here.
You're reading my mail. I have a 2-9 as well. Rugged Union signaling the readiness with the last two works. And then obviously you're dealing with an outfit that excels with firsters and Nerves of Steels, who I had second. The recent workouts catching the eye looks like one ready to move forward off the 3-month break. One other I'll mention, and you know, these jockey angles can put you away as often as they find you gold. But I sometimes will throw in a runner at a price as a backup, like number three, Return the Ring. Got the Lord of the Rings on the mind here. We used to watch every Thanksgiving. Return the Ring. What I thought was interesting was luring Dylan Davis from a horse Jailbreaker who looked like a contender. And then I'm always a sucker. If I can think of a reason to include a first out Spitester, I will. So I'll mention Return the Ring as a potential backup, but I'm mostly with you. 2-9 to kick things off in race number 6. And with that, we'll move on to race number 7. We've got a stakes race for 2-year-olds, the Central Park Stakes, going a mile and a 16th on the green. And Hard Love, to me, was the horse that stood out in here. I just love the fact that this one is one turf routing, shown the ability to pass horses. And this is also a barn I expect the trainees to improve second out. Others to mention, I think they're pretty much the obvious ones. I don't have anything too clever. Number 8, Never Surprised. That was a big figure on debut sprinting. And just watching the tape, looks like a runner for whom the added ground will not be an issue. The pedigree is a little inconclusive on that maybe, but I'm figuring Never Surprised is going to be A-OK going a bit farther. And then the other obvious one, number 10, Roin. This one ran very well north of the border. The horse that ran third in there came back to win. Horse has speed, and another I just thought would look forward. So pretty obvious numbers for me in the 7, 8, and 10. What did you have, my friend?
Those are the exact numbers I had. And I gave a little bit of a bump to Roin. I thought, you know, off the turf, I love horses that, and I think you're the same way. I love horses that can win on dirt, that can win on turf. Who has a landline, by the way? This is like 2020. I thought they disconnected landlines. But yeah, Roin is going to be my pick here. But yeah, you got to use the 7 and 8. Carmouche, 5 for 8 for this Pletcher barn. And Pletcher's barn is just dominating early at Aqueduct, shockingly. So yeah.
The answer very obvious to the landline question, my mom being the and I always forget to unplug this darn phone. I swear that happens every time we do a show from her, but you made a good joke about it, so we will definitely leave it in. Very similar numbers in the first two races as we approach this linchpin middle leg race number 8. We'll see if that continues. We've got an allowance going 6.5 for fillies 3 and up. Where did you land?
There's only one horse in here, and I tried to make a case, but when it's just staring you in the face, you just go to its center aisle. I mean, if this was June or July, maybe C'est Moi would be the pick here, but there's a lot of horses that just don't run as fast, that don't have the class level. The only thing that takes me a little aback that I like that really bothers me is that you're going from a grade 3, grade 2, to allowance, like, makes me think that, oh, the next race is the race they're leaning towards. But it was just so hard. I don't like critical value. Jazz Malibu, not a fan. C'est Moi is not – something's going on there. So I just singled center aisle. Maybe Kansas Kiss, because my boy Ray Handel is just – he's a man beast. He's buff and he's the stuff. He is Buff Bagwell. He's beautiful. He's a beautiful baby. I would maybe say Kansas Kiss because I'm a homer for the home team, but center aisle is just tough.
We appreciate those shout outs to people who hang out at the paddock bar, including Mr. Handel. Once again, probably not surprising given the obviousness of center aisle. We are on the same horse, just too big of an edge on final figures. The significant drop. The only thing I would like to see from her, I'd like to see her handled a bit more aggressively, but that should happen naturally with the switch from Rosario to Ortiz. So it'll be 80%, maybe more, of my tickets through center aisle. I could tell you some stories about Samoa and maybe not being on the right part of racetracks. This is also second off the layoff, and you mentioned it, that form from the late spring would put her right there. So I'm absolutely okay.
It's a podcast horse as well, I believe. Samoa, I think JK gave out that.
That's right.
A few times.
I think, yeah. I think we both did back in that. Was it back in that
Churchill beginning of Saratoga? Yeah,
exactly. So we've got the history there. And if I, for just a penny, Undine, just as one who ought to be on the lead in a race where I don't see a ton of speed. And if the favorite gets too passive of a ride, if they're more worried about the next day than this day. But I mean, again, 80%, 8, and then just a little bit, 5 and 6 for me as we get through this linchpin leg of the pick 5 and move things on to our next one, which is our other stakes race in here. Actually, second of three stakes races in here, the Aqueduct Turf Sprint Championship this time around, going 6 furlongs on the Aqueduct Green. And this was a race where I thought maybe you could get a little creative. And then I kept coming back to the shorter end of the market. In the end, I'm going to spread a little bit here. The numbers as I wrote them down, number 3, Syaf. This one was such an underachiever till the last start when able to control the pace, earning a strong figure. I thought we might see similar tactics in this spot and could be a repeat threat despite the hiking class. At what will hopefully be a little bit better numbers, though not necessarily according to the morning line, Archidust, I thought, fit on the best races. This one has held the form for the new barn. I looked to bet against all these ex-Service and Navarro horses, but some of them continue to run, and Archidust being one. I thought this one had a tricky trip last time out and was worthy of inclusion. And also Maxwell Esquire is a closer I want. Just 4 really nice races in a row. Rock-solid figures in form. Not sure if the trip is going to work out, but hoping that 6-1 of the morning line will materialize. So for me, I was going to play it 3, 9, and 8. I recognize, though, there's a lot of ways to go in here. Where did you land?
So I think this is, for me, this is a complete spread race. I'm going to include your 3. I'm also going to include the 1, the 4, never go against Graham and Graham we trust. The 7, I think El Tormenta has an outside shot. The 2, I like the most in here. Therapist, I mean, the 10, I hate eating the chalk, but I'm going to do it here back-to-back. This race sets up for him. It's just perfect. It's a perfect setup. So you got to throw him on your ticket, I think, with all the speed that actually is on paper, but it is New York, so good luck.
That's part of it. And cutting back, too, it just made me a little bit nervous. You know, coming back quick in 2 weeks – cutting back, I was wondering if I was getting a little bit of last time was the time vibes for a closer, but I would still want some tens on my tickets just because on class and just general logic, the horse certainly makes sense.
Yeah, okay. I'll give a quick note to the number 6 turn to side. I think this one has some upside. We haven't seen it yet. It's a 3-year-old still going against older. You don't like that as much, but the last race at Kentucky Downs, I mean, the race course is a parallelogram or a rhombus of some sort there. So you kind of just excuse that poor effort. You get back to, I think this one can be competitive. Spread race for me, though.
That's funny that you mentioned rhombuses. This is part of my now I'm not doing the full-time schooling as I was with Perrin back in the spring, but I am helping with math from time to time and try to remember the exact, like, the precise definitions of quadrilaterals versus parallelograms versus rhombuses has been bending my brain. I'm not even sure if I could tell you right now. I think the rhombus is the one that both sides are parallel and the angles are the same. Anyway, I never thought I'd have to think about this stuff again. So it's funny that came up. Let's go to our nightcap. I love it. We got a grade 3 nightcap. It's the Long Island going a mile and 3/8 on the turf for Phillies and Mares, 3-year-olds and up, a fully subscribed field here. I've got a horse on my watch list that is a must bet for me, but let's let you kick this one off. How are we going to get paid?
I don't know, man. I was fully prepared to pick a horse that made no sense because I was getting ready for a 40 claimer that you couldn't find with a magnifying glass. Shout out John Conte, RIP brother.
Yes.
So I just went with one and the 4 Muta Makina for Christoph and Dylan. Should have won the Zagora last time. Got a really wide trip. Got shuffled back on the stretch. I mean, you want to talk about a Marty Jannetty dropkick to the sternum. That's it. You just go watch that. I'm sure Benny Southstreet and the Tribunal Pros boys are going to have some words on that. This one, I thought, ran a winning race. This one has the, you know, I don't want to sound like a PTF over here, but the back class in Europe and the French racing, really sexy. It's some good stuff. Give me the 4 Muta Makina, and you know, I think you can create some value with the Chad in here as well, who's going to obviously draw some money.
When you say you're against, does that mean you're against number one, Elliott?
I'm not like super against. I'm going to leave off my ticket to try and create some value. Granted, this one can obviously win, but you know. Hanging like a chandelier ain't a good look for Chad Brown turf horse. You know what I mean?
But she did break through last time. And so that becomes the question with Elliott is, do you accept the last race as a new level of ability or do you look back to the previous disappointing form? But my bigger note on this race, I'm absolutely with you, Muta Makina. That for me, like everything I want in a trip horse, attending a pace that was probably too fast, getting shuffled all the way back, making yet another move, just the kind of horse that now may fall into that international bad trip horse category where she's just going to attract all kinds of money. But we're talking pick 5 on this show, and she's one I'm very happy having 80% of my pick 5 go through, along with a couple of backups. Elliott, who we talked about being one, in case that last race at Keeneland represents a new level of ability. I also like the fact that she really can't help but save ground this time around. And then I'll also use Hungry Kitten just on the obvious form angle. Did finish ahead of the top pick last time, albeit with a much easier go of things all in all. I'll have a little 1 and 11, but it's almost entirely about the 4 for me at the Big A. Thank you, my friend. Good luck in all your wagering this weekend at the Big A and also at, darts, whatever else you got cooking over there at the StuCast. And let's talk soon. I like this idea. We were talking off air about maybe doing some literary collaboration that folks might be able to enjoy before too long. We won't talk too much about it till it's all codified and official. But I look forward to working with you more, my man. We'll be talking soon.
Absolutely, PTF. Love the show. Love RacingPicks.com. Shout out to those boys. And you keep staying classy like Freddie Blassie, baby. I love it.
We'll be talking soon.
See you, brother.
Just a reminder that if you're interested in more picks from me and JK and other members of the In the Money team, you want to check out Twin Spires Expert Picks, every race in New York. You can click on a little icon and get my thoughts. Same thing with JK for California. You'll recognize a lot of the other names on there as well. Sort of a fun little way to get a little extra content from JK, myself, and others through the Twin Spires Expert Picks. Check it out today, twinspires.com or via the Twin Spires app. Next up on the show, a man we've been trying to get back on, and our stars have been crossed, but he was here for the Breeders' Cup, and I know he helped an awful lot of people on that Breeders' Cup show, talking about, among others, glass slippers, and I know it was a profitable Breeders' Cup for you, as it was for many folks who tuned in the Money Media Network. Sean Borman, welcome back to the In the Money airwaves.
What's happening, Pete?
Where are you? That doesn't look like your office, or is it just a weird? Is it a weird angle? We can kind of see angle. Your keyboard in the foreground. So it's
this computer's camera is really low, so it's just picks up the keyboard. It's nice.
We can make it work. We can make it work. It's something. It's something a little bit different. How's your play been since the Breeders' Cup? Are you able, as many players are, to take a little bit of a pause post Breeders' Cup, or do you just keep on grinding right through?
What is a pause? What does that mean? I sit down for like an hour a night and watch a TV show with my wife, but then that's about all the break I get.
And how's the punting been since?
Okay. I probably just tread water since Breeders' Cup, but not bad.
We're talking about doing this idea. I think I want to do it, even if we, a production meeting in the middle of the show. I should probably do my job and try to get the thing sponsored. But even if we don't get it sponsored, I'm liking this idea of doing something for the big international day at Hong Kong, just because it comes at such a good time, being in the middle of December, and there's not a ton of great USA stuff at that time. Are you looking forward to that, or do you prefer the sort of, I mean, I know just the day in, day out Hong Kong stuff that you pay attention to provides all kinds of opportunities. How does it change with the international day?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but the overnight Saturdays are just tough. You know, I prefer Happy Valley on Wednesday when I can get up early and it's a little more normal than staying up all night and trying to pay attention to that stuff. So
if I was younger and harder core, it would be fun to do a live stream for it. Now, I know, I think we had Tommy on at some point for one of our Breeders' Cup shows, for one of our Horse Player Happy Hours, and he talked about doing some live streaming overnight. Did it? Do you know if any of that ever happened?
If it did, I'm not aware of it. I haven't seen anything about it. But
we'll see. If there's a day to do it, it would probably be the big international day. Well, I'm not going to commit, but I'm not going to rule it out. I mean, it might just be a fun and ridiculous excuse to get up in the middle of the night, and I'm sure we could find other horse players sick enough to join us, don't you think?
I would think so. I can think of a few, maybe.
And obviously, this would, you know, be great to do it open to the audience. I did not come prepared. I do not have the right PPs open in front of me, but I do know that the pick four at Churchill kicks off with the Goldenrod. And that's the first race we're going to talk about. It goes as race number 9. This is going to be 4:57 on Saturday. 2-year-olds going a mile and a 16th. This is the this is on the filly side of the equation. Do you want me to kick off, or do you want to kick off here?
Doesn't matter. Why don't you go ahead?
All right, I'll kick off here because I like number 5 Travel Column in this spot. Did not break well in the Alcibiades and then made a little middle move. The winner handled her super easily in the end, but Simply Ravishing has already run since in the Breeders' Cup, while this one has been working in a way that suggests to me a forward move is coming. I don't really have anything exactly against Simply Ravishing other than the expected short price, but I thought Travel Column might be a little bit interesting. How does this one look on your stuff, Sean?
You know, she's interesting. She didn't get the best trip last time against Ravishing. I just don't know if she's quite graded stakes material yet, but as we've seen, these Brad Cox horses can rapidly improve over a course of weeks. So she's interesting. To me, Simply Ravishing is just better than this group. McPeak had that horse run really well yesterday, so it seems like he's firing on all cylinders. So in terms of the pick four, this is a race where you just got to decide, am I for or against Simply Ravishing? If you like her, just single her and go on. And if you don't, I will throw her out and not use her. I'm just going to single her and try to turn it into a pick three. But, you know, the other ones I thought could win would be the 5 and the 9, Princess Theorem, I was a little interested in as well.
Do you think Princess Theorem is interesting potentially from a vertical point of view, coming off the nice maiden win?
Yeah, certainly. That's one thing I'm definitely going to do is play an 8-9 exacta and flip it a little bit in here. But even for, you know, she's getting better, and she ran faster at every point of call in that last race. So that's a sign of a horse that's just really improving to me. And she, in my opinion, has more chance to jump up and win this race than the 5, but they're both viable alternatives, I'd say.
I like the sound of it. I may be wishy-washy and play half the money through Simply Ravishing and try to do a little bit with the five and the nine. I got to still see how the whole thing shakes out. What's your general opinion of horses like Simply Ravishing making their next start after the Breeders' Cup in the same season?
You know, years ago, it was sort of a negative thing. But I think trainers have sort of figured that out. You know, it was like years ago, you didn't want to bet the Dubai horse is coming back, but now it's, you know, you could do that. So I don't have a problem with it. You know, I think it's just the individual horses as opposed to just a firm rule, do or don't bet on them. But
I agree completely, by the way.
Spot, you know, she looks way the best and it's tactical. So I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, but and McPeak, we've talked about this. He can be hard to read because more than so many other trainers, he really just like it's a good thing. He likes to run his horses, but it can sometimes make it hard to figure out exactly where they are on the cycle, where they're going to go. But I feel like that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of when I came into the game in the 90s. I feel like I would frequently and successfully bet against the Breeders' Cup horses coming back at this time of year. And I feel like in recent vintages, if anything, it's a positive as opposed to a negative. So yeah, I can make no knocks on Simply Ravishing. Let's move on to race number 10, 2-year-old allowance going 7 furlongs on the Churchill Dirt. And this is a race where there's some obvious ones at the top end of the market. I felt like I could tell you a story about number 4, Pico d'Oro. Last race was not good, but I'm just assuming there that something went wrong as it proceeded a layoff, working well locally since, apparently, presumably with the new blinkers. And I just felt like if you keyed off the race 3 back, built in a little improvement for age, this one could be a factor at a price. And I thought just looking at pace figs shouldn't be too far back. Now, I know very often you're less forgiving of bad last races than I am. So I was guessing this would not be one you'd come up with, but curious what you thought about Pico d'Oro and the rest here in this intriguing little allowance race at Churchill on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't, I wish she didn't. I've got her, you know, marked as declining in form. And that's just a little thing I've done in my PPs that, you know, it very well could be they took the blinkers off last time. She ran terrible. They put them back on. So that could be the excuse. So she's interesting. I wouldn't want to take her at a short price.
No, I agree with that for sure.
You know, 8-1, sure, that makes total sense. I do think this is a race to take some longer priced horses because I don't trust the 6 at all. And I think the 6 is going to get bet. And the 10, you know, it's a Cox horse and could improve, but he didn't do enough to me last time to be a real short price in here either. So I was going to mess around. I thought the 3, Twilight Blue, and the 5 were both interesting price horses that could run in here.
What did you like about the 5? Crazy Shot at 20-1 on the morning line.
Yeah, the 5, you know, the 5 just – ran faster throughout that last race on my stuff. And, you know, it doesn't look pretty on paper, but I like turning back from 8 to 7. And just the fact that he looks to be sort of a hidden improving kind of horse in a race that I don't really like the short prices.
Sometimes, too, it can pay to be a little bit more forgiving, I feel like, with homebred 2-year-olds. Is that an angle you pay attention to? I know I've mentioned it on these airwaves before, and I've mentioned it as something that I want to study, but I just feel like the expectations are so different for a homebred, and they get campaigned a little bit differently. And I don't exactly know what it is, but I think there's something to study in how homebreds are campaigned versus sales horses that somebody could probably find a little bit of an edge with. And, you know, I don't see anything specifically with Crazy Shot, but I did think it was notable that this is a homebred, and it just feels logical that they'd be brought along more slowly, not cranked up to be sold, and therefore maybe they can keep improving throughout a 2-year-old or even 3-year-old season more so than a sales horse.
Well, that makes sense to me. I've never really looked at it. I don't pay attention to the breeding, you know, the breeders all that much. But no, that makes complete sense.
So, all right, you're going to look for some prices there. So it feels like we're both at least mildly against the six founder and the 10 Mandaloon. Will you have them on your tickets at all, or are you just stone against?
I'm probably just going to throw them out because I'm going to single the short price in the first leg, and there's a horse in the last leg. I think I'll single at a shorter price. So I'll just throw them out. If they win, they win.
Let's talk about race number 11, Sean. It's the Kentucky Jockey Club Grade 2. Certainly an interesting race historically. And it brings together kind of an interesting field. A few intriguing runners in here. This is another one you have to make a decision of what to do with the favorite. Keep Me in Mind. This horse may have been flattered by the setup last time, I thought. I'm not in a huge hurry to oppose, though, just because of the figure edge. But I do want to have something else. And the one I thought was interesting was number 7, King Fury. This one felt like was absolutely rushed coming back in less than 2 weeks, the last day to compete in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But if you key off the race 2 back, fits well, appears to have worked well since in blinkers, and just another one I could see a good trip from, maybe a second flight kind of grinding trip, should be out in front of the heavy favorite. I'm not going to stand in the way of Keep Me in Mind completely, but I definitely want some 7 King Fury on my tickets. How did you see this one?
No, exactly the same, actually. I was very interested in King Fury. Another horse that, even though he wasn't really a pace horse last time, his pace figs, because of that fast pace in front, went up, and he was able to maintain his finish relative to his prior starts throughout that. That's a very good sign, sort of a hidden thing that a lot of people don't pick up on. And, you know, I was really interested in that horse for all the reasons you mentioned. I think, you know, Keep Me in Mind is the best horse, but he has a tendency to break bad. He's a deep closer anyway. A lot of bad stuff could happen to those horses. I think the 7 is probably my top pick in there.
All right. Well, we're both with King Fury in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Anything else at prices you might want to have as backup, since you sound even less sold on Keep Me in Mind than I am?
You know, our buddy Marshall's got a horse in there that I think could be interesting as a pace play. You know, another horse that seems to be improving. They're taking blinkers off. I don't necessarily understand why that is, but, you know, that horse could potentially make the lead, and there's not much pace. That's the 2 Swill. So I think he's a little interesting too.
I'm with you about that idea of Swill as the potential pace angle. It was interesting to see that those, I don't know how you had it, but the fractions on time form last time were coded blue, but the horse is still projected on their projector and then presumably on yours, since you mentioned it, as being clear. One other note on Swill, just and this will segue us to our last race. Swill has been working in tandem with the horse who goes as the number 7 in the Nightcap, Out of Sight. So if Swill does outrun the odds at all, that might be a little bit of a push for Out of Sight in the Nightcap. Not that that's going to help you when you're constructing your pick 4, but just a note I noticed that I felt like was worth mentioning. Race number 12, where 2-year-old maidens once again. And you've tipped your hand that you have one you really like in here, so I'm going to make you go first this time.
Well, it is the 7 Out of Sight. He set really fast pace last time, finished nice. This is the kind of race where I'm either going to have to use him only, which I'm going to do, or use a lot that I don't have any opinion on. So I'm just going to single the 7 and move on. I just think that the natural improvement with Cox and Giroux and the horse, apparently he and Swill both threw a bullet work at the same distance on November 14th. So I don't know exactly how accurate that is. One of them probably didn't throw the bullet. That was obviously a good work for both of them. That's my pick.
Of course, makes a ton of sense to me. We've got a lot of similarity in this late pick 4. Just feels like a horse who has to improve. 7 furlongs being a tricky distance for a debut anyway, let alone when you throw down pace figures like that. You mentioned the workout since. There have been 3 of them and that 1-2 back, that strong 5 furlong bullet. We've talked before about the Barry Meadow computer analysis and how having that fast 5 furlong work since the last race takes basically any stat you want and makes it better. There's definitely some signal in that that to this point hasn't been fully appreciated by the market. And I'm with you. It's not like I exactly want a single, but I feel like if I don't single, I have to use five. And I feel like for the pick four, I'm not sure I want to deal with that. So I think I'm going to go ahead and single out of sight. Hopefully sevens will be wild at the end of this pick four and we can get King Fury and out of sight in and we'll know exactly how we're going to get paid. What else is going on with you this weekend, Shauna? Where else will your wagering action be focused?
As soon as we get done here, I'm going to flip over to your Stronach 5 analysis with JK and listen to that and try to make a fairly serious play in there.
It's an interesting sequence. I thought for open races, and you never know how this is going to go, but I will say usually on these shows when we have agreement, it's not the, oh, okay, we are agreeing about long shots that aren't really going to be long shots. It's typically good things happen, which is making me feel fairly optimistic that, you know, we would have races where, you know, they were deep. You had to use four horses, but where we had three of the same four. Right. So I'm hoping that we're in tune and going to be able to make a run at that Stronach 5. If you're listening to this right when it drops, you probably still have time to get over there. I'm going to be posting our ticket. If you don't have time to listen to the show, you can still go over to the Stronach 5 show page on InTheMoneyPodcast.com and potentially play along or at least get our quick thoughts in ticket form with that $91,000 carryover. It's definitely something that should be commanding horse players' attention. All right, Sean, thank you for your time here. We'll have you on again soon, and Godspeed this weekend.
Good luck, man.
I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. This Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. Great time to help us make our goal. Look how close we are to that $20,000 goal. Please give there. We're going to have Kim Weir on next week to talk about what else you could do to help support the TRF and Giving Tuesday. The link you need, trfinc.org/players. That link once again, trfinc.org/players. Our shows are brought to you in part by our friends from Mill Ridge Farm. If you want to learn more about Mill Ridge Farm, you can hear me talk about it, but more fun to watch and learn. There's some really great content. We're seeing some of it on the screen right now over on the Mill Ridge Facebook page, including a tour where you get to meet the weanlings and see what they're up to over at Mill Ridge. 35 grade one winners since the year 2000 have rolled through Mill Ridge. Their standing Oscar performance. They are a really interesting link at the intersection between horsemen and horse players, and we're proud to be partnering with them. Go to the Mill Ridge Facebook page to learn more or check them out at millridge.com. We wrap things up with the racing that I've come to associate Thanksgiving weekend with. I've actually been out at Del Mar for the last two Thanksgivings. Obviously, that was not in the cards, and I definitely am missing not being at the Turf Festival for the first year in a few. But I am going to be wagering on these races. We're going to look at three graded stakes on Saturday and two on Sunday, and to do it with you, I'm going to call him our resident Del Mar expert at this point, coming back to join us on the In the Money airwaves. You know him from InTheMoneyPodcast.com, the great work he did also on the Breeders' Cup Premium Package. John Pinder, how are you today?
I'm great, PTF. How are you?
Things are good. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was feeling very... I was grateful for the food, for sure.
As a Texas resident, I assume you were not able to do any wagering. I can't imagine you sneaking out to the actual track to get any business done on Thanksgiving, but maybe I'm underestimating you.
No, I was unable to yesterday. The plans are today and tomorrow. We'll see.
It's the secret is safe with me. Are these races that you pay attention to year in, year out, this old Hollywood now Del Mar Turf Festival? Has this been in your Thanksgiving weekend horse playing consciousness? I know a lot of players are still in a little bit of hibernation mode from the Breeders' Cup, but for me, this is the weekend, even when I take a little break, that I would always come out of it, at least to pay attention to these races, just because you get to see so many good horses.
For sure. Yeah, anytime there's graded stakes races, and typically it also helps me being here at Central Time a little bit later in the day. I can get things done and then still have time for for the races. So yeah, these are definitely been on the radar and looking forward to going over these today.
Let's do it, man. Let's start off with the fifth race on Saturday's program. It's the Grade 3 Jimmy Durante. We've got two-year-olds. This is a race where the East Coast has done well. I realize that a big part of our prejudice for me and JK when we talk about East Coast turf form and how well it ships west probably comes from these days of racing. For example, in the Durante, the last five winners have shipped from out of state into California. I'll ask you, John, will that be the case once again, or do you think the home team has a chance in this year's Durante?
This one's a little tough. I think the home team does have a shot or two in here. The horse that I like the best is Quatrell, number 9. I think she can get the job done. We'll see if Mullins and Bays can pull it off. I was really impressed with her last race, that maiden win at Santa Anita. She looked the goods. Sat behind. I don't really know, the form said that she was checked a little bit. I thought that Tyler Bays just put her back there purposely, and she made just one heck of a run. She was down on the inside at first, swung wide, and just looked like the way that you want to see a good turf horse finish. So she's the one that I like here.
I get it, and would definitely be one that I'd want as at least a backup. I'll look one gate to the inside, and that is to Fluffy Socks, who I don't have the numbers yet, so I'll give him the number here. But I actually have to count, which is kind of embarrassing. The number 8, I believe. I think Quadrell is the 9. Fluffy Socks is the 8. This one I really like from a flow point of view. I felt like last time out made maybe a little bit of an early move into that hot pace, cutting some serious lengths into the lead in the fastest part of the race and just getting beat by Ingracia, who's one I'm a big fan of. And then I was just as impressed, if not more so, from the race 2 back at Pimlico, closing without the benefit of a particular setup and getting up rather easily over a filly who I think is very talented and another I might even consider as a backup in Invincible Gal. So I'm all about Fluffy Socks. I like the idea of Quadrell as a potential backup. And Invincible Gal, I can't really make you the handicapping case other than this was one that just really impressed me before, during, and after the first race. And while I think Fluffy Socks is clearly better, feels like from this outside post position is one that could maybe get ignored and one you could do something with. Just one of those things where, I don't know if you do this too, John, where there's certain horses that you just start to follow, and then they show up sometimes in races where they don't necessarily look that great, but you just know they have talent, and the inclination is to keep them on side. That's how I feel about Invincible Gal here.
I do the same thing, Pete. I've kind of grown into my handicapping with the horizontal wagers. A horse like this, you never want to like leave off your ticket. She may not be the best, like you say, today, but you know that performance is there, and you don't want to get beat by it. And then you're going to get a better price too. So I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I think the 6-1 makes sense as a morning line. I'm not saying it's a bad morning line, but just seems like the kind of horse that could get ignored and drift up way beyond that with all the market enthusiasm I'm expecting for Fluffy Socks, who remains my top pick. Let's move on. We'll skip ahead to race number 7. We've got the Grade 2 Seabiscuit. We're looking at 3 and up for the males this time around, going a mile and a 16th at the Grade 2 level. And there were two that I wanted in here. Number 8, Another Twist of Fate, I thought made all kinds of sense on the surface switch, given the sire, Scat Daddy, and the trainer, Peter Miller, who's had plenty of success with surface switches over the years. I also wanted to use number 12, Flavius, has that very big race to run back to, 2 back. The trouble may have been a little overblown last time in the comments, but still feels like the kind of East Coast turf runner who's heard from in these type of spots. I'll be trying the 8 and the 12 in the Seabiscuit out at Del Mar on Saturday. How did you see it, John?
Not much differently, Pete. I'll give the viewers and the listeners two more angles to kind of look at. One horse that I like, Imperador, the number 4, is Scott Drayton Van Dyke ran against really good fractions at Churchill. And as I watched that replay, I was really impressed by his ability to stay on, because those fractions were top notch there. So number four, and then also number 10, One Bad Boy. He's the type of horse that kind of, he's going to be a long shot. I think who knows, sometimes the betting public can make us scratch our heads, but, was kind of knocking around in the optional claiming ranks then. And, his last race was looked like a $70,000 race. Is one kind of like your previous horse you were talking about can get overlooked. And I think this is one that definitely is going to be up near the front and just doesn't seem like he wants to quit. And so I don't want to get beat by him. So
I get it. I absolutely get it. You got speed, you've got double digit odds, you got Flavian Pratt and Richard Baltus in your corner. So One Bad Boy, definitely one that I'm going to be thinking about at least as a B. And to your point on number four, Imperador made that move into the hot pace and still hung around for second. So another I could see getting a piece of this thing at the very least, potentially at double digit odds. So a few interesting ways to go there in the Seabiscuit. Let's talk about the Grade One action on Saturday. It's the Hollywood Derby. I'm still so glad they kept the name of this one, remembering the race it was for all those years. And for me, this is a spot that must have been circled on the calendar a long time ago by West Point Thoroughbreds, Christophe Clement, and Decorated Invader just makes a ton of sense on this one. I think will finally be a bettable price after being bet to odds on whatever it's been the last five times. I feel like the last race that might have been, I love Rosario, but you know, once in a while you do see that let's call it overconfident handling of horses where it just leaves them maybe a little too much to do, runs out of racetrack. I feel like that might have happened to Decorated Invader the last day. I don't think that was a bad run. There's going to be plenty of pace here to set that up. There's plenty of ways to go in here, but I kept coming back to Decorated Invader, and that's where most of my money is going to be going. What do you think of him and the rest of this group in the Grade One Hollywood Derby?
Spot on with Decorated Invader. He's just the horse that, you know, again, we kind of keep reverting back to, has that talent, and you don't want to lose out to it. And Joel, yeah, with those confident one run turns or one closers, with Joel likes to put every horse he's got on. Sometimes it's just a little bit closer. You can see a totally different outcome there. So I definitely see the case on Decorated Invader. I do think the pace is going to be really, really smoking in here and get smoking and smooth like straight. Number two, that horse is, he's going to be on my ticket just because he won't quit. He's going to get the lead, whether he whether he concedes it to someone late, he's gonna go towards the front. And you've got several others in here. So Smooth Like Straight, the number two would be on my ticket. And then I also like Gufo, the number 13. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Gufo, the stablemate of Decorated Invader, and on numbers kind of looks just as good. So I'm glad you mentioned him. I have this gut feeling that Decorated Invader is better, but Gufo, if we got into talking backups, both Smooth Like Straight and Gufo would be backups for me.
Yeah, so those are the ones that I like. And you know, again, Christoph and Flavian, give me anywhere near, you know, 5-1 or somewhere around there, I'm gonna be all about it.
I don't mind Domestic Spending as a backup either. I mean, I'm kind of surrounding the ticket with the shorter prices, which I don't always love. But depending on your construction, it's not that hard to necessarily have 1A and 3 or 4 Bs. And Domestic Spending is just one that, based on his best closing sectionals, if the rides don't get timed right by Joel aboard Decorated Invader or Gufo and Pratt, another I feel like could come running. Do you respect Domestic Spending in this spot, or is he one that you're against?
No, definitely respect. He's an AB for me, just depending on how much or I can spread or get thin with the tickets. He'll definitely be there in some capacity.
Let's move on to Sunday's action. The first graded stakes race is race number 7, the Cecil B. DeMille, a grade 3, going a mile on the turf. I'll be on, I should have mentioned earlier, for the international viewers, I will be on Sky both Saturday and Sunday. Some of these races will be happening too late, but I'll definitely be on for the earlier ones. I haven't seen the schedule yet, but I'd be surprised if I'm not at least on for some of this action. Here we've got 2-year-old colts going a mile on the turf in this grade 3. What did you come up with in here?
This one, Pete, I kind of like it. There's no one that really just stands out for me. I've got to respect the number 6 Party Game. No American form yet, but when you get Jeff Mullins and an Ireland Shipper, I kind of got my hand slapped or bitten a couple times in the Breeders' Cup, just seeing how well those horses run over here. And potentially getting some, firm ground to run on. He's going to be one. There was a key race that a lot of the horses in this race ran in. Ibeco or Ibico was one of the horses. Also, Kaysen was also in that race. And I think those horses are a lot similar, a lot alike. I think you're going to get a better price on Kaysen, number 9. He ran a good race, just like all of them did, but he got blocked in on the rail late and finished 4th, I believe, in that race, to where the other 2 finished in the top 3. But he would have been right there, potentially would have won the race if with a little better setup. So the 1 and the 9 for me, Pete.
I've got a goofy one for you in here who I really think has a chance. Now, may have a tough trip again, but Wooten Asset presumably came here to run on USA ground, has run on yielding twice on the East Coast, now moving out to the West Coast. And I just feel like both of these races were better than they looked. I thought was best 2 back in the USA debut. And then last time was tricky, but I mean, it was just hung out there the whole time and didn't do a ton of running, but it's just an effort, that run on Halloween on yielding at Belmont, that I'm willing to give another chance. Graham Motion has had plenty of success at this turf festival. I think him shipping this runner out there, I'm hoping this is another one of these instances where the other Motion runner I was talking about before, Invincible Gal, hopefully the difficult post just adds to the price. I feel like on the best form, Wooten Asset fits with these, has those nice closing sectionals from 2 back. I feel like this could be, I don't have morning lines yet, but I'm hoping this is another under the radar contender, a horse north of 6-1 that can be considered as an A in the Cecil B. DeMille. Let's move on to our final race we're going to be talking about on this section of the show. We're back to grade 1 action in the Matriarch, where we've got fillies and mares, 3 and up, going a mile on the turf. And John, I will let you kick off with this one. I love this race. I think it's a true grade 1. I'm really excited to see how it plays out on the track. Where do you anticipate your money will be going?
I agree with you, Pete. Very competitive, very looking forward to this race. I'm going to probably start and maybe finish most of my betting with the number 2 Maxim Rate. This big filly, she romps. And even going a mile and a half, mile and 3/8, and I think the mile's going to sit her perfect. So she's the one for me in here. I'm also not against the 2 Chad runners in here, more so on Tama here. The
number there's 9. Actually 3 of them. There's 3 of them. You got Blowout, Viadera, and Tama.
That's right. I was a little bit against Blowout just because I think the running style, because she wants to go to the front. So I've got 2 Chads over here, and I think Tama here is the out of the 3, she's the one that I think has the most talent. That last run was super impressive. So
it was visually just awesome. And that was truly one of those cases. And it's such a dangerous thing to say when you talk about visually impressive and could have run faster. But the jockey never moved. And yet she still came home faster than what any of these have done. So, I mean, I take your point about Maxim Raid and flying late and all that. But I think Tamahir might be the best closer. a horse who may be an underlay, but just based on what final figures she's been running, but I still need, I cannot lose to Sharing in the spot. Just the prototypical, never done anything wrong. You know, that big run at Ascot, came back, showed she's still whole with her win at Churchill. I wish she'd done a little more on the clock to be as short as I imagine she's going to be in here. But for me, I'm going to try to get out of this spot with Sharing and Tamahir. Tamahir is going to be my top pick, I think, just based on the visual impression and the closing sectionals she was able to lay down in that last race at Belmont. But Sharing is one who I think has to be respected and should get a great stalk and pounce type of trip in the matriarch. Where do you stand with Sharing?
She's right there, Pete. Like I said, I just wish the time would have been a little bit better. That's the only thing that's lacking there. But you see the heart in the running lines. It's just one after one after one after one. So she's, you know, you definitely don't want to get beat by her.
It feels like if Graham Motion and Chad Brown do well at the Del Mar Turf Festival this weekend, we'll do well. I think that's my summing up of our picks. You had some clever long shots as well, but just looking over my notes here, we'll see if this East Coast turf form shipping west can get the job done for us this weekend at Del Mar. John, thank you so much, and we'll have you back soon to chat about some more races. Godspeed this weekend.
Thank you, Pete. Take care.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. We'll thank our guests, Alan Studer. We had on here Sean Borman and John Pinder. We'll thank producer Craig, DJ Unstable himself, working over the holidays for us, pushing all the right buttons. Always appreciate him. And most of all, want to thank all of you, the fans of the In the Money Network. We'll give another little quick shout out. Go ahead to these ABR awards and cast your vote for us. We appreciate your support. We appreciate how much fun these shows are to do because of you, especially at a time like Thanksgiving. It's easy to reflect and give props for all the support that you give to us. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. Just me.